The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. So can you hear me okay, everyone? Yes? Okay, good. So I've been away this last week teaching a retreat, and so that kind of, I thought it emptied me of Dharma talks. And so I wouldn't have anything to say today, and I thought we would do questions and answers. We could still do that if you prefer that, but then it came upon me what I'd like to talk about. So what would you like? The original plan or me talk? I don't know. Now I don't know. Well, we'll see. Maybe it's a mistake. Whatever I decide here, and from the story, I'm going to tell you a story about someone who made a mistake. So, in Buddhism is pretty wide, diverse religion, and it has lots of stories. Some scholars of religion say that what defines religion the most is the stories they tell more than the doctrine that they believe in. And the stories is what people orient their lives around and pass on to their children and so forth. And this is one of the most famous stories, Buddhist stories, in Southeast Asia. Probably some people say second only to the story of the Buddha's awakening. And this is a story that has to do with the Buddha's last life before he became a Buddha. So there's these Jataka stories, which are called stories of past lives of the Buddha, and many, many lifetimes, you know, in this Buddhist lore, mythology, there's all these fables. Some of them are like Aesop fables. They have to do with the animals, when the Buddha was a deer, when the Buddha was a lion, or different things. And so then these wonderful fables, and they make great kid stories. And so in one of these stories, he's a human being in his last lifetime before he's going to be born as Siddhartha, who's going to become the Buddha. And his name is Vesantara. And Prince Vesantara. And he's born as a prince to the king and queen of the queendom. And early on, he exhibits an unusual characteristic, and that is that he's very generous. And so he starts as a little baby just giving people things, whatever he can, give things. So he grows up and he's always giving things away. And people are really inspired by how much generosity he has and how caring he is for people. But then he starts giving away things which are not his own. And so apparently there's something like a state elephant that doesn't belong to the king and queen. It belongs to the whole country. And he, as the prince, he gives the state elephant away. And maybe it's like giving away the, is it called Air Force One, the president? Obama decides, here, take this. You know, it doesn't belong to him to give away, right? So he's giving away. So the populace gets pretty upset that he's giving all these things away that belongs to the populace, belongs to the people, and so they get angry at some point. And so they go to the king and queen and say, this has to stop, you know. By this time, Prince Vesantara is a grown-up, and he's has a wife and two young children. And so, under the duress, under the pressure from the populace, the king and queen, something has to happen. We're going to banish you. Maybe they warned him a number of times. Maybe it was three strikes and you're out. And so, they at some point they banished him from the queendom, and he had to leave with his wife and two children, and they left the queendom, and they came to some deep woods, some neighboring country. And there in the woods, in a little opening, they built a little hut to live. And he was still, you know, just being generous whenever he could. People came by. And so there's different versions of the story, but I'll tell you the most human one. And his reputation as being this great, generous person, is spread around. So this person comes along and, you know, realizes that how generous he is. And so he says, well, will you give me your wife? And he asks, can you give me your children? So now when the story is told in Thailand, it's oral tradition, this is when people all kind of get still and quiet. I mean, this gets pretty powerful at this moment. And being generous to a fault, he gives away his wife and his children. And this is, people who've studied this phenomenon, storytelling in Thailand, say this is the point where people have heard the story many times, they start crying. You can imagine, right? It's a pretty awful thing to do. And so the children and wife go off with this other man. And now, watching all this from the heavenly realms is the great god Shaka, one of the great gods of the Indian pantheon. And apparently he's pretty impressed by the virtue of generosity that this man, this Visantara, did. So he comes down, and he makes everything right. You know, gods can do that. So the children come back, the wife comes back, you know, he brings them all back to Visantara, and then he brings them back to the queendom and says, we're back. And the king and queen and the populace receive them all nicely, and everyone's happy ever after. So that's the story. And it's quite a long story, so this is about as short as you can give it. And it's kind of a little disturbing story, this idea that you'd give away your children and your... Is this the highest example of what generosity is? Generosity is one of the primary virtues of Buddhism. And in order to become a Buddha, you said you have to have perfected your generosity. And so some interpretations of the story is that at this point, Visantara had perfected generosity, give away even your children and your wife. And therefore... You know, he was ready to become a Buddha. I think that's a terrible interpretation. But I have a different interpretation, and that's why I want to tell you the story. So, in order to become a Buddha, someone who can be a teacher for many people, not just become enlightened for yourself, but enlightened to be available and have a kind of connection to people that you really be able to support them and help them and understand them in the depths of their lives. Before he could become a Buddha, he had to make a big mistake. In order to have the compassion, to perfect his compassion, he had to make a big mistake. And that's about as big a mistake as you can give, you make. And luckily, Shakya was watching and it got all fixed. But in that mistake, he learned something. He learned something about himself. He learned something about maybe about others and people and what it like to make a mistake and how to live with a mistake and how that maybe connects him in a deeper way with the human condition and how difficult it is to be human and the mistakes and the challenges that many people have and to understand them in some intimate way. To be born as a prince in luxury and have all this stuff and freedom to give and live in kind of an ivory tower, I don't think it really helps a person understand so much about what human condition is like for many people. And we have the same kind of idea in the story of the Buddha's enlightenment, where it's probably also a little bit of a mythology, that he was also raised as a prince in a very removed from the suffering and challenges of life, protected from sickness, old age, and death. And then at some point, in his 20s, he somehow got curious but was on the other side of the walls of the palace and went out, and then he saw sickness, old age, and death. He saw people who were sick, saw people who were old, and saw people who were dying. And that was the catalyst for him to then go on his quest for awakening. So this idea of that part of what the quest or the catalyst for practice, for some kind of new relationship to our life, to understand something deeper, to give birth to kind of compassion and awakening, wisdom. We have to see the life in its most challenging forms and shapes. We don't want to live kind of isolated in a cloud, ignoring what goes on in our society and around us. And also, we don't want to necessarily ignore the mistakes we make. It doesn't work. If you want to become a Buddha, it doesn't work to make a mistake intentionally. You know, so you can, you know, just so you can, you know, get on with it. But I think it's pretty human to make a mistake. And then to learn from that. So the question for you is, why might it be so important to make a mistake in order to really open the door to the world of practice, the world of compassion? What is it about making a mistake that is not a mistake? Or what is it about making a mistake that teaches us something very, very important that we can't really learn unless we make a mistake? How is it that the mistake, in a certain kind of way, even though it maybe it causes problems and suffering, maybe in a certain kind of way can become a gift, become something actually very important, and turn a life in a certain direction in a good way? So that's the question I have for you. And what I'd like to suggest, you don't have to participate. You can either leave or you can sit quietly. I prefer, if you don't want to do this, sit quietly. And then we'll do a little discussion afterwards, is to turn to two other people near you. So it's a little group of three. And answer that question about how is it that we benefit? How is it that we become better people? Or how does it benefit us to make a mistake? Or how do we, more importantly maybe, how can we look at mistakes, the mistakes that we make, and not just see them as a drag, as a problem, but turn them around and learn from that and grow from that and open up to that in various ways? How does that work? Now, in this conversation, you don't have to, confess, you know, that you've given away your kids and you realize eventually that was a mistake. You don't have to confess something that you don't want to say. And you're probably not so useful to tell a long story, but because they don't have that much time. But mostly, what are some of your ideas? And if groups of three, one interesting way of doing this is just make one point. And then let the other people make one point and one point. And then you've heard other people's points. And then when it's your turn to do another point, hearing them might have evoked some new ideas you didn't have before. So you're not kind of just repeating what you already know, but something new comes out of it. So think of it maybe more as a listening exercise than a speaking exercise. But don't speak really fast so you can listen to the others. You have to offer them something so they can hear too, some points. So is that clear enough? And I want one more thing to say about, talking with each other. It's actually very important for a Buddhist practice community to be able to get to know each other some and be able to share a little bit each other's perspectives on practice and get a sense of community. So it's one of the few, we don't do this too often, but it's a nice thing to do. So if you, those of you who are ready to bolt, it's okay. But what invariably happens is the people who don't want to do it find afterwards that they're really glad they did. So you can either sit quietly or join in or whatever you'd like to do. It's all fine. But I would encourage you to form little groups of three and then have a little conversation for about 10 minutes, and then we'll regather here and continue the conversation. Okay?
the volume on?
Sorry?
A lot of reluctance in the crowd to participate.
Apparently nobody's made a mistake here.
So did any of you learn something new about the benefits of from making a mistake that you'd like to share with us? The outer hall.
What I concluded is that I should be able to forgive other people more easily than
I do. Can you
get
it louder?
Oh, yeah. Okay. That I should be able to forgive other people more easily than I do. Because when I make a mistake, I would hope people would forgive me, and I should be able to turn around and forgive other people, that I should not have such a high opinion of myself.
Very nice. Thank you. That's great. So when we make our own mistakes, we can have more care, understanding of other people and their mistakes, and more ready to forgive them. Thank you.
I'd like to say it was really good to recount the mistakes, to bring them out of the mist and sort of right into the present. And second of all, I just really benefited from seeing someone else's recounting, correcting their mistake. It's like pointing the way that I can go, oh, I can see that, and I can do that too.
Nice. Thank you. So it turns out there are a few other people around who make mistakes. And we can learn from that, and if they, depending how they, the wisdom they have and how to relate to it. Yes?
Something we were talking about is, you know, how we talk about learning from our mistakes is almost seems like a cliche, like we should, everybody learns from their mistakes. But something that struck me was I was wondering if perhaps there are things that we learn only through making mistakes. I'm just kind of meditating on that, because if there were an easier way to learn something, then we would do that, right? So maybe it's sort of like I don't know if there's this analogy to how diamonds are. Isn't there some rough process to creating a diamond or a pearl or something? Like maybe there has to be some roughness or some difficulty involved for us to learn in a more meaningful way, or
a more profound way
or a way that sticks.
And we learn through the mistakes. We learn through the challenges. It's like just a pre-toddler who's starting to just ready to learn to walk. They stand up and take the first two steps and they fall. Oh, you blew it. You know, what a mistake. You fell. You know, you're supposed to be walking. You know, but rather that's how we learn, right? And there's a wonderful story that's, I don't know if it's how true it is, but it's kind of almost poetic story that's often told in our scene of someone who sees a butterfly that's trying to break free from its catalyst, from its little cocoon, and wants to help. And so out of care and compassion, pulls apart the filaments so it's easier for the butterfly to come out. And what the person doesn't realize, that's something in the struggle to break free that lubricates the wings with certain kind of something, oil or something, so it could fly. And so if it doesn't have that struggle, then it can't fly. And so the person watched the butterfly just kind of fall to the ground. And thank you. It's coming here.
We were talking about making a mistake keeps us humble.
Uh-huh.
And also the acceptance of self. Forgiveness is great. I like that point. We just didn't talk about that. Just the acceptance of ourselves as human.
Mm-hmm.
That it's okay. We also talked about freedom from the bondage of self.
Freedom from the bondage of self. So if there's a lot of self, then it can be harder to make mistakes and or to admit it. Yes, please.
Yeah, I think we were talking about a mistake can break a pattern and take you to a new community. And that brings in an openness and new ideas or a new realm that wasn't there before.
Yes. Nice, very nice. Take the wrong turn on a path, you know, walking around the neighborhood, take a wrong turn, oh, I made a mistake. And you come into a new place you've never seen before, new community, yeah. Up here on the stage.
We talked about a couple of things. One is that if you are afraid to make a mistake, that stifles creativity, innovation, et cetera. And then the other was that a mistake can sometimes reveal an undercurrent or a pattern of which you were not aware.
Nice. So out in the outer hall now.
Couple of things. Someone pointed out that the way to proficiency and excellence is often the path through mistakes, and especially true of medical professionals, surgeons especially, who any physician worth his salt has made innumerable mistakes to achieve that proficiency. Unfortunately, they are victims of those mistakes.
Yeah.
Secondly, the fear of making a mistake which is irrecoverable often is very stifling. I know it troubles me a great deal, and not so much for the mistakes that perhaps can be fixable, but for the mistakes that I realize are irrecoverable, and that is very stifling and it leads to suffering in and of itself.
Yeah, the fear of it, sure, certainly. And then sometimes we do make terrible mistakes, painful mistakes, and then it can crush someone to have made kind of a social mistake, you know, cause harm and other people. And but also there also it can open a person's life up to a whole new direction, I think that's the story of Visantara, the previous Buddha before, you know. Making this huge social mistake, you know, caused tremendous suffering, I would think, giving away your children and wife. Terrible thing. And so I imagine that's not simply learning proficiency, learning how to give away better or something in the future. It's, you know, it's really feeling remorse, regret, feeling compassion, all kinds of things, humility, all kinds of things that can make a person a better. It's some, you know, meditation is a process of continual mistakes, right? Or continuous failures. And one of the benefits of meditation practice is to learn to fail better. Because, you know, you try to stay on the breath and you fall off. And you get back on, you fall off, you know. And then you find yourself, you were gone for 10 minutes. Where was I? You know, I was trying to meditate and I didn't do it. So So rather than seeing it mistakes as problems like that, that's how we learn in meditation. We can learn from that, and we can learn what it takes to stay more present, how to let go more and relax more and be more committed by watching and seeing, oh, I fell off. Yes, please.
Okay, so I really, when I make a mistake, I can be hard on myself, and I'm a little embarrassed, but sharing it with the group of people that were like, looked like their faces, they looked compassionate, and like understanding, which made me feel like, oh, okay, maybe I can be a little more understanding and compassionate for myself if these other people can.
Fantastic. Wonderful. We should do that more often then. You have little mistake circles.
I was wondering, in the story, it didn't sound like the Buddha felt very bad about his mistake or reflected on it at all. He was saved before he even thought about things.
Right, right. The story is very, I find the story very unsatisfying. I saved the story by interpreting it that he had to make a big mistake to learn compassion. And I think it's true for many people that you bought the wrong ingredient for dinner, but if you make a real social mistake where you feel a lot of remorse and regret, you feel like you've caused harm in the world, hurt other people, that kind of mistake can be a source of deep compassion and waking up the heart and feeling a connection and feeling remorse and feeling like I need to change my life for the better in a new way. And so that's how I save the story. Or at least say it differently, that's how I find the story useful for me.
We talked about also not being too hard on ourselves after we made a mistake, and just being more forgiving and showing self-compassion. And then another thing that came to me was that when I make a mistake, then I realize what I don't know. Because I think I know what's happening. I know what this person and why they did it. And I realized that I made a big mistake like that very recently. I realized how much I didn't know and how wrong I was. And so it gives me a compassion for all that I don't know.
Nice. Very nice.
I like the story you told about the main story as it's told in the religion is missing the point or is unsatisfying. That brings that we can recognize the mistakes of organizations.
Mistake of what?
Mistakes of organizations.
Oh, yes, for whole religions.
Yeah. And by having compassion in the way we've been sharing it personally, if we have it toward the institution or the authority, it helps us speak clearly.
Nice. Very nice.
So a mistake can help you know what isn't true.
Uh-huh.
And that can help make you confident when you do find something that is true.
Mistakes can help you understand what is not true and give you more confidence when you discover what is true. Nice.
So sometimes people around you may think you're making a big mistake, but you in fact know that you're not. And that's an interesting situation that I experienced, where I was changing and growing and becoming more free in a very deep way. But people who saw me go through that didn't recognize, the old person they knew.
Nice.
And it was painful for them. But
I imagine a little bit uncomfortable for you to have them think you were mistaken. So, you know, this whole world of mistakes comes, especially if they're social mistakes, social relationships, you know, are challenged by it. Whether you're right or whether you're wrong, or whether you made the mistake or it was misunderstood or something like that, does produce a certain degree of discomfort. And so the fact that we can benefit from it and learn from it doesn't mean that it doesn't come with discomfort. And, you know, some remorse, some regret, some, you know, something's not quite right sometimes. And so part of the task that we can learn through mindfulness practice is learn how to be comfortable with discomfort, how not to recoil or run away or get angry or try to fix too quickly, and learn to kind of relax with discomfort so we can learn from it and live with it, sometimes in wise ways. And sometimes the allowing ourselves to feel uncomfortable allows for growth. So I've made social mistakes where I've caused, you know, people to feel hurt, and I felt regret and remorse, and it's uncomfortable to feel that. I wish I didn't feel that. But I think it's important not to quickly overcome it, not to quickly kind of cheer myself up, you know, so I don't feel uncomfortable. It's in the discomfort that the lesson really goes in deep, and I can learn, and compassion and learning and self-understanding can come from it. So one more over here at the end, and then we'll stop.
Thanks. So I just wanted to pick up on the connection you made to practice, because there's something very powerful there. So when you said, when we're practicing and, oh, whoops, I've been gone for 10 minutes, I better come back, and that's a kind of mistake, and we can be learning about making mistakes. And so for me, when I do that, and I do it all the time, of course, when I come back, if I can come back and find the place of tremendous relief and freedom that, that's what I just left behind. I can come back here and find that place. Mm-hmm. Then I'm back. And I think the way you taught that story and when you gave your interpretation of it and you said it's about learning from our mistakes created that moment for our three people. All three of us, something opened for us in that moment of we can learn from terrible mistakes, and so all three of us were on the point of tears. Something deep opened,
nice.
And in the same way that I think can happen in practice.
Great. So beautiful what you said about if you come back for meditation or come back from a mistake, rather than getting lost in our, you know, our self-criticism and all that, there can be a place that's a freedom or a release or coming back to what's true. Even if it's uncomfortable, but that freedom can feel very good. Is that right? Nice. Great. Well, thank you very much for being part of this morning. I hope that I didn't do a mistake in my choice of what to do here. And maybe I was given enough freedom to do something different today because you insisted that I speak. So thank you very much, and I appreciated all the comments you made, and I hope that it was nice for all of you to be part of this. Thank you.